The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, Scott Fairweather has just come into studio, aptly enough, is a Scot, who is obviously well named, and has been resident in Ireland for many years. He is, however, a keen observer, obviously, of what's going on across the water, which we usually refer to as England, but not today. And you have noticed, obviously, a big upsurge in the debate. Was it that the fright of God was given to people last Sunday, or has this been growing? What's the difference between your last most recent visits?
Well, I've been across twice in the last 2 months. I was across for a holiday for about 2 weeks, and then I went across for a long weekend for my mother's 80th birthday. And when I went across for the 2 weeks, I travelled the length and breadth of the country, and there's a palpable sense that there's a discussion going on in the heart of Scotland, which is great. It's really good. It's inspiring to watch it happen. And there's a definite political debate about the various different merits of the yes and the no camps. I have to sort of preface all this with the fact that I would be a very definite yes voter myself.
Why?
I always have been. I come from a place called Arbroath, which was the location of the original signing of the Declaration of Independence in the 1300s by Robert the Bruce. And it's been a...
You have a memory as long as the Irish, don't you?
Well, we're taught all that at school.
Yeah.
The history of Scotland. And it's kind of being brought home just now, how important that's all been. And I think, coming from Arbroath's a very nationalist area of Scotland. It's returned nationalist MPs for decades and decades. You kind of grew up with that.
Is it heart or head?
No, that's a good question. Just now, people are sort of categorising that battle between yes and no as a battle between heart and head. And I think that's a misnomer. I think, you know, it's as much your head to vote yes as it is your heart.
Well, there will be, you know, there will be implications for it. You were writing about it during the week, Gerard, weren't you?
Yes, well, interesting that Scott should mention Robert de Bruce. You know, yeah. Bannockburn, this is the 700th anniversary of Bannockburn, which was the last effective separation between England and Scotland. And within 3 years, Robert de Bruce's brother, Edward Bruce, was King of Ireland. Now, his time here didn't
last. Gerard, the things you know.
Anyway, I don't expect Alex Salmond's brother, if he has one, to become King of Ireland. But the consequences are going to be enormous for us here on this island, firstly in the north and secondly in the south, and then for the relationship between the island of Ireland and what is now called Britain, and whether that entity called Britain will survive Thursday's vote, of course, is the great question.
Yeah, you think that it will have... dodgy consequences. Well, unquestionable, interesting.
Unknowable.
Whether it is a yes or a no vote.
Yes, if it is a no vote and ostensibly business as usual, I think a huge amount will have changed in any event. If you look at the 19th century from, you know, Daniel O'Connell through Buss, through Parnell, through John Redmond, the Home Rule question never went away. The issue of Scottish independence is not going to go away because there is a no vote next Thursday. In any event, there is a certainty now of a significantly enhanced degree of devolution, though we don't know the detail of what that may be,
yeah,
and what the knock-on consequences then for the relationship between the central parliament and government in London and Wales and Northern Ireland included, and the inevitable knock-on consequences for any of those internal relationships in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and yeah, Northern Ireland for us here in the Republic of Ireland.
The other thing, I can't remember which paper it was in this morning, there are a lot of articles in all of the papers, and they were quoting a debate between two people who are involved in the British government, one of whom is Welsh and the other of whom is English. And one of them was saying, well, listen, you're a Welshman. Why are you making decisions for us English people? And those are kinds of conversations that we actually never heard before. Or were they always going on under the radar?
Well, what you're talking about there is the West Lothian question.
Yes.
Which is why, you know, you should have a government in Scotland, a devolved parliament in Scotland, and then you have Scottish MPs in Westminster voting on essentially which are English things. And that's a question that's never, ever been solved. But just to go, if it is a no vote on Thursday and we wake up on Friday, there has been a lot of promises made, but we have been in this position before in the late 70s where a whole load of promises were made and then we had got Thatcher.
Well, I think things have changed to a great extent in that, you know, I was just reading Michael McDowell in the Sunday Independent today, and he says, if the vote is a narrow no, Salmond wins anyway. Independence will be on the permanent agenda politically. And, you know, I think
he's trying to say not so, because Cameron is saying this is it, kind of, you know.
Oh, yes, yeah. You have no choice. No, he can't do that. I mean, things have changed. 4 weeks ago, it looked like it was going to be no and there was no argument. But if you look from an Irish perspective, has Irish independence been a success? Yes. I think anybody who looks at it is a success.
Well, you could say it wasn't. I mean, you could say that we have, on a cyclical basis, got ourselves into unbelievable messes. Yeah. We have exported our people. We did it in the 50s. Absolutely, we did it in the 80s. We're doing it again. It would appear we're incompetent
in
at
many
managing
other
ourselves.
Countries too. But would you prefer, for instance, to live in Newcastle upon Tyne in England, which would be the possible alternative? As McDowell says today, if you draw a line from the Wash to the Severn, below it, Southern England is very successful, very dynamic. What has happened above it has been an inexorable decline for a long time. With independence, Scotland at least has an opportunity then to do some of the things that Ireland has done recently to fight for its own identity, its own industries up there and so on. And I think there's a very good argument to be made that way. I really do. I think that's a very strong argument.
What's your view on?
I think an awful lot of people, I've been going around for the last number of weeks thinking that this was going to be a no vote. And I have to confess, as a result of that, then I wasn't sort of locking into the entire issue. But now that it's, you know, the yes is a distinct possibility, I've started giving it a little bit more thought. On the economics of this, I think there's a bit of a concentration and over-concentration at the moment on the possible short-term consequences.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's all like, is RBS going to pull out? Are Tesco going to put prices up or whatever like that? And I said, I genuinely think that is really short-termism. I mean, obviously, if this happens, this is for the long term. And then the question, it really becomes, well, what makes countries successful and what makes them less successful? And typically, the sort of things we would think about would be things like, you know, is your education system going to be good enough to produce good quality graduates? So industry is going to want to locate there. Are your institutions good about, you know, quality of government, regulation, all these sort of things, the business environment? So there's a range of sort of factors that economists have looked at, you know, across all the countries of the world, and you can get a sense of what allows a country to grow and what doesn't. And I think if you sort of applied the sort of four or five key characteristics and you asked, well, does Scotland possess these? The answer would be yes, it does have the fundamental possibility.
Does so even it surprise if there's a, you that people like Deutsche Bank would start telling people how to vote in Scotland?
It does. I mean, I think you can get a little bit cynical. I mean, I have to say, we were looking at one of the most interesting pictures in the newspaper today. Mm. Is actually in the Sunday Times. Now, I forget what page it is, but if anybody has the Sunday Times at home, flip through and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. But they have a full page. It's the yes argument on top and no argument on the bottom.
Yeah.
They have a picture of Alex Salmond dressed in a pair of tartan trousers. He looks like a stand-up. Yeah, he looks like a stand-up comedian.
Nearly.
And then on the bottom section is Alistair Darling, who looks, you know, extremely competent, and you know he's in a regular suit, and it's just fascinating to see somewhere like the Sunday Times, where clearly there must have been an agenda. So why that is sort of seeping into Deutsche Bank, I'm not entirely sure, but as I said, this is all pretty short-termism stuff. I think the question is, in 5 to 10 years, what is the probability that Scotland will be functioning like a sort of a, you know, a mature economy? And I would have thought the prospects would be pretty good.
But the issue, Marion, on this island is ultimately not Scottish nationalism, it is English nationalism, because if there's a yes vote or if there's significantly enhanced devolution, English nationalism is coming increasingly to the fore, and to what extent they are prepared to continue to subsidise to the degree they do Northern Ireland, for example, remains a very live question of immense importance for us.
UKIP have come out against independence for Scotland, haven't they?
They would, wouldn't they?
Well, they would, but having said that, as you say, English nationalism may be, in fact,
and just to take up Scott's point about unfulfilled promises from the 1970s, Mrs Thatcher and her Conservative Party were not party to those promises, whereas in this instance, Conservatives and Labour and Liberals allegedly are.
You're going to have an election within about 18 months or so afterwards. I think if Scotland gets independence, I mean, one of the biggest problems for Ireland is going to be the rump of the UK ending up with a government that could be a Conservative UKIP coalition leaving the EU, having a referendum in order to leave the EU. So I think, as far as Ireland's concerned, that could be one of the significant problems
It'll
of Scotland voting yes.
A problem possibly for Scotland, though, too, because obviously if you do become independent, it will favour the Tories in England, because you'll be pulling all your Labour MPs back, which will leave you in the position that if England leaves the EU, what will Scotland do? Because will Scotland then become a euro country? Will they stay allied to sterling? Those are going to be difficult things. But I would say, I know you're talking about, Alan, from an economic point of view, you can't overestimate the bonus of self-determination. You were saying, Marion, that maybe it hasn't been fully successful independence. Would any of us choose to go back? I don't think you'll find one person who would.
Mm, that's a fair point. Let me go to somebody who was quoted in the Sunday Business Post today. Ireland Scots have their say. And I think it was kind of quite remarkable that a lot of the Scots living in Ireland who don't have a vote would have voted yes. This particular gentleman is going, would have voted no. He's consultant surgeon in the Mater Hospital. Professor Malcolm Kell, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, it was interesting to read that article in the Business Post today, because yours was the lone voice in that feature saying you'd vote no.
Yeah, well, I found that out after the fact. I was a lone vote. Yes, I would vote no. I have to say, I've swithered a little bit in the last few days hearing some of the arguments, but unfortunately, a bit negative maybe on my part, but just really feared of the unknown. I'm not convinced it would be to Scotland's benefit. For, you know, the issues of currency, the issues of the EU and self-governance, would Scotland be able to do that? I think ultimately Scotland would be okay, but I just worry in the short term how detrimental it could be to the country and to the economy.
Well, I know the farmers were very worried because of these single payments and all that, and it's obviously a large farming community. But if you look at the history of Europe, it is, would be highly unlikely that they wouldn't facilitate a Scottish vote. Would it not?
I don't know. Ultimately, perhaps, but in the short term, the yes voters, I think this 18-month period, if there is a yes vote, when all these unanswered things will hopefully be sorted out, I think to vote and the hope that it will be resolved when there really isn't an answer at the moment, I just wouldn't be prepared to do that. I think it's too much of a gamble.
You think it's too much of a gamble? On the other hand, sometimes you have to operate on hope, don't you?
Well, again, that's the romanticism of an independent Scotland. That maybe it is worth that gamble. And that's why I think I have been a bit tempted myself, that perhaps maybe would I take that gamble, but I just think, no, it's too risky.
Right. OK, well, listen, by the way, you have friends over from Scotland this weekend also for the hurling.
Yes, every year.
Last weekend. You're right about Gaelic tourism, it has to be said. And we were just talking about that earlier on. And they come over every year.
Yeah, every year for either the football or the hurling. And it was a fantastic game this year. So maybe the hurling again next year.
Right. OK, well, listen, nice to talk to you. And thank you indeed for taking that call. Actually, one of the British, the English newspapers had photographs of Scots American. And again, they don't have a vote. And again, it won't implicate them. And again, they were all in tartan. And they were of all skin colours. And they would all have voted yes. And this is why I wonder if you don't have to deal directly with the consequences of the risk are you inclined to vote in a different way?
They're known as guilty pleasures.
Oh, Sam.
Can I just say, Ciara picked me up on only talking about economics, so for fear I come across as being a one-trick pony or whatever like that. In one of the box posts during the week, I thought it was very interesting. Somebody was asked, why were they going to vote yes? And their answer was Gaza. Okay, which seemed a bit of a lip, but when she explained it, it made perfect sense. It was the idea that this person did not like the way the London government, had the foreign policy had reacted in the way it was, had. She maintained, and I think you can see that this would be perfectly true, that in a smaller entity that you could have a foreign policy that might be more reflective of the people of Scotland. And I think very often when we talk about Irish independence, we at least like to think that we have an independent foreign policy. That's very debatable. Mm-hmm. But if you go back to people always sort of point to the example of Frank Aiken in the 1960s and that we did, at various stages.
Yeah, but if you take what's happening now with all the disasters that are happening around the world, Europe seems to be incapable. I mean, there's that thing that we should speak with the one voice, but then there's the fact that you might like to have your independent voice as well and say, actually, I don't agree.
Well, I mean, maybe Scotland then can have an interesting negotiation for their entry into the EU.
It will be interesting to see what happens. They have to do it within a certain amount of timeline after the vote. If the vote is yes, they have to do it within about 18 months.
Right.
They have to get something organised. But I can't see why the EU, Scotland has 1% of the population of the EU, but we have 60% of the oil. We have something like 25% of the fisheries. I can't see why Scotland would be ignored by the EU.
I think, but I do know
that there would be. There'll be interesting discussions to be had with Belgians and with Spanish.
Well, this is clear. I think it's the broader issue and why the EU is terrified about this. If you take Catalonia, for example, there are a whole host of issues that the Scottish situation could give rise to. And then you're into that murky world of European politics, which is phenomenally complicated.
Well, devolution was always seen as appeasement to separatists or people that have different... This will throw that completely on the other end. And the Spanish are concerned about, they grant autonomy and said, you should be happy with that. And in the Basque region, they say, no, we're not. And in Scotland, they say, well, you got this, you got your education, you got your health. No, that's not enough. I think it's really interesting. I think devolution is going to be seen completely different.
Right.
One of the big things that I've taken away from it, though, is how civilized the debate has been.
Yes.
And never at any stage has it gotten, if politicians on soapboxes in town centres, it gets a bit heated then. But around the dinner table
last week, and the balance was completely other.
We were out of the 12 people that were there that could vote, there was 11 yeses and one no.
Wow.
But there wasn't.
And that is the feeling that you get when you travel around Scotland. Yeah.
But there wasn't, as it were, war. And
the person that was the no vote held his own quite firmly.
Good.
And there was a nice spread as well. There was young people there, there was older people there, there was pensioners. It's a really nice spread, and it's a really nice, and it's very invigorating to see the debate.
Okay, now we have some other people we want to talk to about this, but first of all, we are going to take a break. With us in studio, we have Scott Fairweather, we have Kevin Cullen, Ciara Kelly, Alan Barrett, Gerard Howland and Sam Smith, and we'll be back with you after this.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.
The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Everyone's talking about the revolution driven by Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back to the programme. Now we've been joined in studio by John Kennedy, who's editor of Silicon Republic, and you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you.
And if you care to join in, I know what you're talking about, a whole range of other things, but we're going back to the Scottish independence referendum. And we're going to be joined now on the phone by the Most Reverend David Chillingworth, who's Primus of the Scottish Episcopalian Church. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, Marion.
And now, your biog is kind of very interesting because you were a Dub.
Well, I was born in Dublin. I grew up in the north and I spent almost 30 years in ministry with the Church of Ireland in the north. So I've been through all the ups and downs of the story of the Northern Troubles before I moved to Scotland, which is nearly 10 years ago now.
Right. And Drumcree came within your ambit, which must have been very difficult.
Well, it was the next parish, and many of the leaders of the Orange Order were my parishioners. I suppose it dominated my life for 7 or 8 years. It's one of those things where all of the passions of the Northern Troubles for a period were focused in that. But you know, it's a great privilege to be in these places and live through these periods and be close to it. I think I was very privileged to be there.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm glad about that. Now, I know that you're a regular broadcaster with the BBC and you have an online journal, Thinking Aloud. I don't know whether it's from your time in Northern Ireland, but I see you quoted as saying, "I react very badly to flags being used as electioneering symbols." And you don't like the mixture of that and religion.
Well, I think to take the second one first, Marion, I think that the understanding of sectarianism, which comes out of research in the North, is that it always involves essentially a negative mixing of religion and politics. It always involves religion. And when you get the mixture of faith and politics, you get a peculiar brand of hatred. And we've been very anxious to keep faith and churches out of the independence debate. There are obviously aspects of it that we're very concerned about, but we're not participants. We've said that we are neutral. I've sometimes said agnostic. Yes, the thing about flags goes back. I mean, you can't live in Northern Ireland without seeing flags used as an aggressive symbol of identity. And so it stirs that again for me when I see flags being used in that way in Scotland. To be honest now, I mean, there's been less of it, much, much less of it than you would see in Northern Ireland. It triggers a memory for me.
Right. Well, Scott Fairweather was saying that he's just back. He is a Scot. He's living in Ireland. And he was saying that it's been a kind of a very amicable, I suppose, might be. Would you say that's a fair word? Civilised.
I wouldn't ever say it was uncivilised now. It was amicable. And then it caught light, I'd say, about 3 weeks ago. I think it's very passionate now. And if I could just say this, other people might want to react to this, but it seems to me there are two debates going on in Scotland at the moment. One is about identity and how you feel about and how you feel about living there, and should Scotland be independent. That's kind of an identity debate. And the second debate, which I think is the more passionate one, is about the questions like currency, EU membership, and all of those things, which are questions to which there either are or there aren't answers. And it's that set of questions which is generating the passions.
Scott?
I think that set of questions is what the no camp were sort of generating the fear around. And I think it's a battle between hope and fear. And I think that the Scottish people are a more hopeful people than they are a more fearful people.
Yeah, the other thing is, just listening to various people talking and writing, there seems to be a very strong belief in Scotland that that you come at decisions with more communal benefit in mind than individual benefits in mind. Would you think that's true? David Chillingworth?
If you're asking me, yes, I think that is true. I think that Scotland, part of what this is about whether there is a separation of values between Scotland and particularly the southeast of England. And Scotland definitely, in my view, is more communitarian. The gap between rich and poor, I think, is probably less. And Scotland, I think, manages its diversity really well. But then, of course, there are many places which are distinct in character and culture, Liverpool, the northeast of England, and so on. So it doesn't clinch an argument. But right. I think it certainly is a real, what we're searching for is a way of building the kind of society which is true to the values which seem to be common right. in Scotland, and which makes Scotland a very good place to live.
That's been borne through by the fact that some of the main people that are driving the arguments are coming from the arts, they're coming from community sectors. Those are the kind of people that have been engaging right. the most with the debate that's been going on.
OK, I gather you still have the harp on the passport.
Yeah, I do, yes.
So,
I do, yes.
And you have a vote. What way will you be voting?
I have already voted, but I don't think I should be telling you what the vote is. But I think the problem with the independence referendum is not like an ordinary election. I mean, if you elect the wrong set of people, you can't put them out next time. This is a once. And I think it's that's stirring the apprehension. So we'll see what happens
right.
because. It's going to be very passionate over the next few days.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I understand you're walking the Camino at the moment, so may I wish you well.
I'm on the Camino and it's raining.
Yeah,
raining. It's raining, and my feet are sore, but otherwise everything's fine.
Okay. Listen, very nice, very nice to talk to you. And before we leave that, I just wanted to come back to you on that, Jared, because you were talking about the kinds of things that he was saying that's the tug really between the identity, the practicalities. All of that,
and indeed, and another thing, of course, part of the identity, huge part of the identity of the United Kingdom, so-called, is the monarchy. Alex Salmond has clearly said the Queen will remain Queen of Scotland. But the question in my mind is this: Queen Elizabeth will be Queen of Scotland for her life. What happens when that reign comes to a close? And I'm reminded of the External Relations Act here in 1936, when De Valera used the pretext of the abdication of Edward VIII to effectively abolish the role of the British monarch and Irish government. So the issue for her is not for now, it's what happens to the monarchy in Scotland after her time, if there ever is a King Charles in Scotland in those circumstances. And of course that is a huge part of that identity issue that we've just been speaking of.
Right. Well, we will watch with great interest. And it is good to see a debate going on without people having, you know, their necks strained and all that and shouting at one another. So congratulations on your civilised approach at the very least. Slightly envy of us. Anyway, we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.